Thank you for being of service. Tonight, our main speaker is Lisa with a Z. Please help me give her a warm welcome.
Lisa, alcoholic. Thank you, Tom, for asking me to come and share. This is the worst part of recovery is having to do this. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. So this is where I need to be. My sobriety date is September 15th, 2009. I just celebrated 6 years. Thank you. I grew up here in Santa Maria. I was born and raised here. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My grandmother was an alcoholic. She was a very angry alcoholic. So we had a lot of chaos in the home growing up. My mom and dad split up when I was probably about six. You know, I had my first taste of beer probably right around six. And the only reason I know that is because, you know, my dad would be barbecuing and there would be beers and I would be, you know, taking drinks and I liked it. And, you know, his friends would always say, you better watch out for that one. She's going to get in trouble. So at 6 years old, I can remember getting him a beer out of the refrigerator and taking a drink and feeling the warmth and feeling how it made me feel. I mean, at 6 years old. So, you know, growing up with just my mom and my brother and I and then my alcoholic grandmother, you know, she ruined a lot of holidays for us. She ruined a lot of, we have a lot of bad memories. Alcoholism then was swept under the rug. You didn't talk about it. My mom was probably the worst at it. You never tell anybody anything. You just don't talk about it. And we didn't know at the time. I mean, there was no recovery like this. There was nobody to talk to. And so, you know, we would always just tell her, why can't you just stop? Just stop drinking. And, you know, I watched her as a little girl having seizures. You know, she was sick with the flu or something and she couldn't have alcohol in her system for a couple days. You know, she'd have a seizure because that's what happens when we stop putting alcohol in our body. And I grew up with that. I watched that. And I remember when I was 8 months pregnant with my daughter and she had another seizure. And I remember seeing her in the hospital. And she was completely strapped down, hallucinating. Just, it was horrible. And, you know, at the time, my mom, she's anti-drinking. This is what alcohol does to you. And I still drink. I mean, I probably drank immediately after I had my daughter. It didn't stop me. All those bad memories and all of that stuff, It didn't stop me. I was always the partier in high school. I was always the one that wanted to be the last one to leave or go get more, no matter what it was. If it affected me, I wanted more. And then, you know, I was 20 years old when I got my first DUI. And I went to jail and I paid my fine, and I did what I had to do. And I went another 20 years before I got another one. And it's not because I didn't drink and drive. I just didn't get caught. So this last DUI that I got 6 years ago, I was living out at my dad's. I was drinking every single day, morning, noon, and night. If I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I made a cocktail. I was completely swollen, and I could not stop drinking. I would look at myself in the mirror, and just horrible. So I was living out at my dad's house, And my kids and I, we were living in a camper trailer. I had borrowed my camper trailer from my ex-husband, and we parked it out there, and we had full hookups with two kids, 7 and 9. Yeah, so that was an experience. I was out there for probably 8 or 9 months. I don't know what my family thought I was doing out there, because all I did was drink. I'd get in the car at 7 o'clock in the morning, take the kids to school. There was always a cocktail in my console. I had one before I left. I had to gag it down so I could stop, so I would stop shaking. And that was how I functioned. That was my day, every single day. I'll back up a little bit. I had my first marriage. We were married for about 7 years. I had two kids. He left. He left when they were 3 and 5. He's an addict too, and he just took off, completely abandoned us. And so I thought it would be a good idea to hurry up and get married again so that my kids could have a father figure. So I got married again, and that was a freaking nightmare. That's when my drinking really started. Him and I drink together a lot. He had kids. Being a step-parent is the hardest thing in the world. I don't wish that on anybody. Sorry. It's hard. So him and I, we weren't married for very long. I finally left because he kept telling me that I was drinking too much. My drinking was out of control. I can't go a day without drinking. So get rid of him. So I left. And we still talked once in a while, but I didn't want to have anything to do with them. You're not going to tell me that I drink too much. So that's when I moved out to my dad's, and the kids and I were out there for 8 or 9 months. And what happened was I went to a Monday night football party at a pizza place. And there was a whole big group of us, all with all the kids. The kids were little. And, you know, we drank beer and we watched football and had pizza. And the whole time that I was there, I had one beer. But I had already been drinking throughout the entire day. Probably, you know, I don't know how many drinks, but I didn't count. But so on our way back, I don't know if you're familiar with Santa Maria. Telephone Road is where my dad lived. And there's a cooling plant out there where trucks pull in. And I was coming down the hill, and the truck was actually parked in the middle of the road like this. Like he was waiting for them to open the gate. And I just remember, I turned around to look at one of my kids, and I just remember looking forward, and the truck was like right there. And for some reason, I swerved to the left, and we crashed. I don't know why I turned. I don't know why I didn't. I reacted that way because they, apparently, all three of us would have been dead. We would have all three been decapitated if I would have just hit it straight on. So I get out of the car, and the guy's coming around the truck. I'm all, what the hell are you doing? Why are you parked in the middle of the road? And I'm chewing this guy out. And he's like, are you okay? Oh, my God. Because the whole windshield was crashed in. My son was in the front seat. My daughter was in the back seat. The car was totaled. And thank God nobody got hurt. That is the blessing, is that nobody got hurt. My kids were crying. I was literally 100 yards from my dad's house. And so I called him, and he came out. Highway patrol came, and they arrested me. My dad took the kids so that they didn't have to see me, you know, be put in handcuffs. And they asked me if I needed an ambulance. And first I said no, and then I said yes, because I remember the last time I went to jail, how long the process was. So I thought, well, if I can stretch out the night and be in the hospital longer than I'm in jail, that would be better. So I went to the hospital, and then they did the blood test and everything, and I'm trying to text all my friends and letting them know where I'm at and what happened. And so when we're leaving, and they're leaving the hospital, I asked the highway patrol, I said, I'm going to get out in a couple hours, right? And he says, oh no, you have a felony. This is you. You had your kids in the car. This is a felony. And I thought, oh God. So I went to jail and, you know, started going through the whole detox thing, and called my dad, told my dad that they wanted X amount of dollars, and he said, tough shit, I'm not doing it, you're staying. And I ended up getting out the next day, as long as I signed up for the program to have the ankle bracelet put on my ankle, which detects alcohol. So I did that. My brother came and picked me up from the substation here, and my brother's a very successful lawyer, and he asked me when I got in the car, he said, do you think you have a problem? And I said, yes. And that was the first time I'd ever admitted or said anything to anybody that I might have a drinking problem. And so he kind of compared it to my grandmother, because she was always in denial, always in denial. And so he said, then we're going to get you help. We're going to get you help. And, you know, 3 months prior, 2 months prior to this accident, my mom had lost her husband. Unexpectedly, he just had a heart attack and died. And she lived in Texas at the time. And I wasn't working. And, you know, my brother and them, they asked me, you know, can't you go stay with mom? Because she's out in the, you know, she lived out in the boondocks in Texas. And I couldn't. I couldn't leave because I knew I couldn't drink there. I knew that I was not going to be able to have alcohol there. And so I didn't go. I left my mom out there by herself. So when I get out of jail, you know, my brother takes me back to the trailer. And the first thing I do is look in my freezer for my bottle. You know, I could have killed one or both of my kids, and the first thing I do is go look for my bottle. And it was gone. My dad took it. And I would go back and ask and tell myself over and over and over again, if I would have just left 5 minutes later, if I would have just left 5 minutes earlier, maybe that truck wouldn't have been there. But I'd probably still be drinking today. You know, I got a second chance. I don't know why. I don't know why. My kids didn't get hurt. I got charged with a felony DUI with injury, even though they didn't get hurt. If it wasn't for my family, I would have got my kids taken away from me. So yeah, I went for my bottle. And my dad came and he told me, he said, we need to get you some help. And he found a treatment place for me. Him and his wife went online and they got me into CRC, and he paid for the entire thing. And I was there for 28 days. I knew nothing about recovery. I knew nothing about any of this. I just knew that I had a lot of alcoholism in my family. My family liked to drink a lot, and I knew I had a problem. I knew that I had a problem. So I went to Santa Barbara, and I stayed there for 28 days, and my family would come visit me every other weekend, bring my kids. Kids would cry when they had to leave, and it was just... it was heartbreaking what I put those kids through. Heartbreaking. So when I got out, you know, I didn't have a home. I didn't have a job. I didn't have anything. I lost everything. So I didn't even know where I was going to go. My mom was still in Texas, and so we went to my dad's, and we stayed there, and he took us in. And he... He took care of us. And my dad is not that kind of person. You know, he was gone for a lot of my life when I was little, and I had a lot of resentments towards him. And I hated him for a long time. And he took care of us. So I get sober, and I'm 28 days, and I'm going home, and I'm scared to death. Oh, my God, I'm scared to death. Because I had this group formed. You know, you have this little family with these people, and everything is so structured. When you have breakfast, when you have lunch, you have four meetings every day. You never have time to yourself. It's just very structured, and that's what I needed. Obviously, that's what we need. So I was scared to death because now it's all on me. What am I going to do? Are you going to continue this? Because you're not having somebody tell you that you have to do this every day or you're going to get kicked out. So I remember I went to my first meeting at the 1600 Club, and it was a 5:30, and my dad had dropped me off. I had no way of getting around. My dad drove me everywhere. Every meeting I went to, he took me, picked me up. My mom took me, picked me up. My whole family. And I walked into the 1600 Club, and I sat down, and the meeting had started. And I just remember people getting up and going to get coffee or going to the bathroom or going outside. And I'm just like, what are you people doing? Sit down. There's a meeting going on here. Because in Santa Barbara, you sat down and you did not move during the meeting. You don't get coffee. You don't get anything. You sit down and you listen. And I was so used to that structure and that discipline that I was like beside myself. And I'm like, these people are nuts. I'm out of here. And so I left. Called one of my friends from the rehab that I was at, and I told him, I said, this place is ridiculous. There's no way I'm going to get recovery here. And he said, try another one. Just try another one. So I tried another one. I think I went to the 8 o'clock the next day, and that was a little bit better. But I kept going. I just kept going. I didn't need a sponsor. I didn't need any of this shit. I didn't need any of it. I was just going to go to meetings, and I'd be fine. And, you know, I'd always hear people share, you got to get a sponsor, you got to get this, you got to work the steps. And I thought, yeah, well, this is for you guys. This is not for me. I'm not doing this crap. And so it took me about 5 or 6 months to finally, I was a raging bitch. I mean, you're just... no alcohol, and I don't know I'm supposed to know how to live. Are you kidding me? And so I was horrible. And so finally, I'll never forget this man, Jim, took me outside after a morning meeting, and he said, have you got a sponsor yet? And I said, no. And he said, why don't you call Lane? And I said, okay, I can do that. And it probably took me a few days, but I called her. And she was my sponsor. And Lane and I, we're best friends to this day. And Lane was able to, because I'm up here, I'm a spaz, and Lane's kind of down here. She's just real chill. And so she was able to kind of calm me down a little bit. This is what you need to do. Don't be so hard on yourself. Just, this is what we got to do. And she walked me through the steps. And she went through the book, and we went through the 12 and 12, and she did all that. And I'm like, what is this all about? Why are you here on a Saturday doing this shit with me? And half the time, I didn't even realize what I was doing. I didn't even realize that I was working this program. I was doing this shit, and I was staying sober, and I was becoming happier. And it just amazes me how it worked. And you know, it came time for me to make my amends to my family. And it was the day before I was going to jail, because I got sentenced to 90 days. And it was the day before I went to jail. And so I had all my family there, and Lane was there. And they were all sitting, and I just started crying and just spewed everything out and how grateful I am. And my family was shocked. My dad and my brother were so uncomfortable. because we don't talk about stuff like that. We don't say we're sorry. We don't say I love you. We just don't do that. And I felt bad for them because they were so uncomfortable, and I was so comfortable just doing all this. I'm sorry. This is this. And I was in such a good place when I went to jail. It's a weird thing to say, but I was in such a good place. I was 8 months sober, and it was unbelievable. I don't know. I was just very positive when I was in there, and a lot of that had to do with Lane. She prepared me. Sarah prepared me. Sarah actually met me and my mom at the courthouse when they took me, and she comforted my mom, and I barely knew her, and she comforted my mom, and I know that that helped my mom tremendously, because she's a little freaky. But so when I got out of jail, you know, I was like, oh God, I got to get a job. I got to get my own house. And well, none of that happened. So my mom comes here from Texas because her husband passed away and her family's all here. So she came here and we moved in with her, the three of us. And so it was interesting. But I lived there for 5 years. She let me live there for 5 years. Whatever I could pay her, whatever job I had, I paid her. She didn't care. She took care of us. And it was rough. Louie knows. It was rough. And so, you know, I felt bad for my son because he was being raised by these women. His dad, their dad was gone. He was an angry kid, and I felt bad. You know, he didn't have any male influence in his life. My dad, you know, he's busy. My brother, he's got his own kids, and we're not that tight, like, family, like, you know, you see people. And so I decided to get a big brother for my son through the Big Brother program. So this kid was military and young kid. And, you know, he would come out and he would take Parker on, you know, little, like, fishing trips and stuff like that. Well, there was a trip that they wanted to plan to take to go to Universal Studios. And he asked if Parker could spend the night. And I said, first I said, no, absolutely not. And so he said, well, I'm staying at my boss's house with his wife and their kids because we're going to leave early. And it was on base. And so they came, and I met the family, met the kids. And he had called me that night crying, saying that he wanted to come home. He was only 12. And I said, okay, are you sure? Because if I come and get you, you're not going to be able to go. The only reason you're staying there is because they're leaving early. And he goes, okay, well, wait, let me see. And I called somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous immediately, one of the men that I'm still to this day very close with. And I called him immediately, and I said, I don't know what to do. You know, I want my kid to, you know, he's a boy, man up, right? That's what you think. That's what I thought. I'll be honest, that's what I thought. Well, this guy ended up touching him inappropriately. And I didn't find out until probably a couple months after. And so I fought with myself, and I still do. I'm working on it still. You know, why didn't I listen to him? He was crying. Something was wrong. Why didn't I go get him? Maybe that wouldn't have happened. But we worked through it. We pressed charges. We had a court martial. He was found guilty. He was sentenced to 9 months in a military prison. 9 months. To this day, I still can't find him. He's not registered. I have no idea where he's at. That whole thing was a complete nightmare. And it's not just the fact of what happened to my son. It was the whole fact of just dealing with the military and everything, the way it all works. I'm not downing the military, but it was just a bad experience. So My son went and he testified. He went in there by himself. He didn't want me in there. He testified and he did his part. And I was so proud of him for doing that. I was proud of him for coming to me and telling me, because the majority of the time, nobody tells. We don't talk about it. And so we got through that. And then I, you know, walked in to, I used to take my grandma all the time back and forth to her little coffee shop across the street in Orchid, because she kept falling and landing on her face. She'd fall and get black eyes. And so I wasn't working, so I said, I'll just come and pick you up and drive you over there. So I did that all the time. I didn't have a job, and it was my second year of sobriety. And I was honored to do that, because I got to spend so much time with her. And she, even though she was an alcoholic, she was sober for the last 10 years, but she raised me. My mom was working all the time, and so she basically raised me. And her and I were extremely close. I mean, identical. Her and I are identical to each other. So I tried to call her because I was going to her house to pick something up, and she didn't answer, and she didn't answer. So I finally just went over there, and I walk in, and she's on the floor. She'd had a brain aneurysm. And, you know, she passed away a few days later, but I got to be there. I got to hold her hand, and I got to be there when she took her last breath. That's a gift. That is a gift. I was the only one in that room that was like, okay, I'm good. Everybody else is, oh, I should have this, I should have that, I should have. Well, I didn't have any of that because I did it. And I got to do it. And I got to read the big book with my grandma at the end. She, you know, she never admitted she was an alcoholic, but she did to me at the end. She did to me. She thought me being an alcoholic was her fault. When my mom told her what had happened in the accident, she says, well, that's not my fault that she's an alcoholic. Because it wasn't understood. The disease wasn't discussed, and it's not understood. So today, this last year of my recovery, I haven't really been in recovery. I've pretty much just been sober. I shared this at a meeting last Sunday, or a couple Sundays ago, and then Tom asked me to speak. That's how it works. I've been sponsoring myself, and that is such a bad idea. Such a bad idea. So I'm finally back in touch with my sponsor again. And yeah, it's not a good idea. So the things that I have in my life today, it's not materialistic. I don't have a nice car. I don't have a nice house. But what I have is mine. I have a job, and I paid for it. I paid for everything that I have. I honestly thought that in my disease, when I was at the worst, drinking every day, I'm either going to die like this, or I'm just going to commit suicide. But my kids are going with me. My kids are going with me. I got to figure out a way for the three of us to go. So, you know, for me to finally get over this ego and humble myself a little bit and admit to another person that I need you, I need help, and I need to tell you my stuff, that was huge for me. But the relief and the freedom that comes with that, can't explain it until you do it. Can't explain it until you do it. Lane was my first sponsor, like I said, and when I was 3.5 years sober, she relapsed, and that crushed me. That absolutely crushed me. I thought, my sponsor would be sober forever. And so one thing I learned is you don't ever put anybody on a pedestal in here. Nobody is above anybody, no matter how much time you have. Because your program is how you work it. If you put a lot in, you're going to get a lot out. If you put a little in, you're going to get a little out. Joe Kay says that all the time. And it's so true. So I got a new sponsor, and she's pretty tough. But she's only going to do for me what I tell her. She's only going to be useful to me if I'm honest with her, if I call her, if I tell her what's going on. She can't fix me. I wish she could, but she can't fix me. It just doesn't work like that. So I am so grateful. I'm so grateful for Recovery for Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew nothing about any of this stuff. Nothing. If you're new, fairly new, and you want it, you can have it. But you got to be willing, and you got to want it. That's all there is to it. You have to want it. It's not that hard. Life happens. Shit happens. People die. And you learn how to deal with that stuff here. You have people. I have people in my life that I never even knew there were people like this. That cared so much. That did so much for another person. It's just amazing to me. So, I think I'm done. And thank you for letting me share.